Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Monthly rents and home prices are rising in many parts of Northern California. Rental prices in the Bay Area are at all-time highs, according to a report from RealFacts, a real estate data company. San Francisco is now the most expensive place to rent an apartment in the country, even more expensive than New York City. Over the past few years, we've seen a dramatic rise in evictions of longtime tenants from rent-controlled apartments, pitting tenants and housing advocates against landlords and tech companies, which are flooding cities like San Francisco. According to the San Francisco Rent Board, annual evictions here are at their highest level since 2001. From March 1, 2013 to February 2014, landlords filed almost 2,000 eviction notices. Widespread evictions have been aided by the use of the Ellis Act. That's a law that allows landlords to evict tenants in a building when they want to sell a property and get out of the rental property business. Last week, the California Senate passed SB 1439, which could potentially slow down the number of Ellis Act evictions in the city, and we'll talk about that on today's show. A lot of lawyers say part of the problem is that tenants just don't know their rights. So on today's Your Call, we're going to talk about what tenants can do to protect themselves from evictions. Today, we're joined by Joseph Tobner. He's managing attorney of the Tobner Law Center. Joseph has been doing tenants' rights work in San Francisco for more than a decade, and he joins us from his office. Hi, Joseph. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, and thanks for doing this show. It's really important that people get these messages.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. And here in studio, I'm joined by Tommy Avicola Mecca. He is Director of Counseling Programs at the Housing Rights Committee of San Francisco. He works on the ground with so many people who are being evicted and who are facing eviction. Hi, Tommy. Thanks for coming
in. Hi. Thanks.
Nice to have you. And Chandra Reddick is an artist and San Francisco resident who was recently served with an eviction notice. She was supposed to be out by Thanksgiving, but she and others in her building are fighting the eviction. Hi, Chandra. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thank you, Rose.
So, Joseph, I want to start off with you. You've been doing this work for more than a decade. Talk about the changes that you've seen in the last 2 years. What really strikes you about what we're facing right now?
I think it's a crisis unprecedented. Like you said, it's the highest rate of eviction since 2001. I was doing tenant rights law during the first dot-com boom, and this seems different to me. It seems like a complete clearing of all the old-time San Franciscans. Not counted in your numbers are buyouts of tenants. Mm-hmm. Those are not, the rent board does not track buyouts of tenants, meaning tenants who are paid to move out of their units. Often those buyouts start with an intimidating eviction notice, and then the tenant rolls over and gets paid to move. Those buyouts aren't typically tracked by the rent board, and those buyouts are in the thousands for sure in the last 2 years.
In the thousands?
Mm-hmm. At least.
So what can you talk a little bit about the methods that landlords are using to evict? What is most common right now, Joseph?
So one of the most important things, I think, for the listeners to know is that a landlord has a constitutional right to bring an eviction lawsuit. A landlord cannot be sued for bringing an eviction lawsuit. So landlords hide behind that constitutional protection and come up with a host of reasons to evict tenants. It could be things like nuisance or renting out on Airbnb one time or growing marijuana. It could be any host of or subletting, any small trivial breach. As long as the landlord has some legitimate basis, they can bring this eviction lawsuit, and it becomes a war of resources between tenant and landlord. The landlord will spend tens of thousands of dollars to go through the eviction process. The tenant's at risk because they have to pay to defend the eviction, and it also goes on their credit, obviously, if they get evicted. And in fact, an eviction will go on your credit 60 days after it's filed, regardless of the merits of the eviction lawsuit.
And I understand that classes are also being held right now, classes taught by lawyers to landlords to teach them about how to evict their current tenants.
That's right. There are a number of associations that do outreach to landlords, the San Francisco Apartment Association. There are also private attorneys that do conferences on how to evict. But the tenants are also well organized. I mean, the Housing Rights Committee does great work. Tommy's part of particularly in protesting evictions all over the city. The San Francisco Tenants Union does a ton of legislative work. So the tenants have their own programs as well, and, you know, I encourage your listeners to get in contact with them as soon as they get some sort of notice or intimidating letter.
Joseph, I've interviewed a couple tenant rights lawyers who say that a lot of the people who are being evicted should not be evicted. The problem is they just don't know their rights. Is that an accurate statement based on what you've seen?
I would say, well, from my perspective, I mean, tenants that call us, they learn their rights. So, and I think there are resources out there. I think it's not so much that tenants don't know their rights. It's that the cards are stacked against them. Hmm. It really becomes a war of resources. If you get an eviction lawsuit, it costs you tens of thousands of dollars to hire a lawyer to defend that eviction lawsuit. Landlords know that, and they know that there's this risk of the credit hit. And so they use that to force the tenant out, to roll over, essentially. And also, landlords are hiding behind this constitutional protection. They can't be sued for bringing a lawsuit. There's no risk to the landlord for bringing these eviction lawsuits. So, yeah, there are a lot of Ellis's in the city, a lot of Ellis Acts in the city. There's lots of owner move-in evictions. But predominantly, the biggest evictions are these trumped-up reasons for eviction, like renting out on Airbnb for a few nights.
That is Joseph Tobner, managing attorney of the Tobner Law Center. He's been doing tenants' rights work in San Francisco for more than a decade. And I'll give out the number early because today we are going to answer your questions. If you have faced an eviction, if you're facing an eviction, we'd love to hear from you. What questions do you have about what rights you have? And what are you seeing in your area? If people around you are facing eviction, we'd love to hear from you. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. Tommy, you're director of counseling programs at the Housing Rights Committee of San Francisco, and I understand that all of these counseling programs are just swamped with people. They're trying to hire. They cannot keep up with demand.
That's true. We have all seen the rent board, certainly us, the tenants union, everybody has seen an increase in people coming in. And in some cases, it's just people coming in scared. People coming in, one of the lines that I hear a lot is, oh my God, my landlord's painting the front of my building. He hasn't painted it for 20 years. He hasn't done anything for 20 years, but suddenly he's painting the front of the building and he's keeping the hallway clean. Does that mean that he's going to sell it to a speculator and I'm going to be evicted? You know, it's anybody's guess, but yeah, sometimes that is a sign that the landlord's getting ready to sell the building and you're going to have problems. So, yeah, we're seeing a huge increase.
What has really struck you? What's really changed in the last couple of years?
I think what's changed is perhaps the viciousness with which landlords are getting people out. I was around also, like Joe, I was around for the first dot-com boom. That's when I got involved in tenants work back in the late 90s because I live in the Castro and my neighborhood. I was seeing a lot of friends with AIDS being evicted out of their long-term apartments, and that's how I got involved. It was bad, but nothing. I mean, it was such a shadow of what we're seeing now. What we're seeing now is anything is acceptable to do as long as you can get the tenant out. And a lot of what we're seeing now is people from out of town. It's not even people who live here. I mean, this image of the mom and pop landlord just wanting to go out of the business of being a landlord is such crap, I can't tell you. This is not about mom and pop landlords. So everybody out there, get that out of your mind. This is about hardcore speculators and investors who are coming here with the intent of flipping buildings as quickly as they can and making a whole lot of money. The word is out all over this country that you come to San Francisco, you buy a building, you're going to walk away with a mint. And that's what's happening. So what we're seeing is, to my mind, it is greed. It is the epitome of greed and nastiness and viciousness and total lack of compassion and concern. How else do you explain a 98-year-old woman getting Ellis out of her apartment? How else do you explain that? Or disabled folks or the guy with AIDS in the Castro, you know, whose health totally went downhill after he got his Ellis Act eviction.
Joseph, is there any way to know how many mom and pop landlords are still in a place like San Francisco?
The rent board keeps track of statistics about ownership of buildings. Mm-hmm. we could put together the data. I mean, it's not at hand. But I would want to add to what Tommy is saying that a lot of these evictions are just plain greed to raise the rent. I mean, it's not necessarily that the buildings are being stolen for real estate speculation, although that's a huge part of the problem, but also just landlords seeing that rents are increasing all over the Bay Area and getting greedy and coming up with bogus reasons to threaten tenants.
Mm. Well, and just to let people know, I mean, in my neighborhood near Golden Gate Park, a one-bedroom is now going for $3,500 a month.
Yep.
I mean, you can't find a studio for less than about $2,500, which is just kind of shocking. And a lot of people say that if they get evicted, and as you said, Tommy, I have so many friends who are afraid of this. Mm-hmm. If you get evicted, where would you go? I mean, if you can't afford $3,500 for one bedroom. Chandra, you were evicted in November. You're an artist, a San Francisco resident. And I understand that you and others in your building are actually fighting the eviction. Tell us about your story.
Yes, I live on 1049 Market Street. It's between 6th and 7th in San Francisco downtown. And there's multiple people that own the units. I live in my building at 1049 is 80 units. But the owner, the group of owners, they actually own two other buildings that size on the same block, plus a number of storefronts attached to that. So there's a lot of money there. One of the new owners bought our building in 2010. So it's very sleazy looking like they bought it to turn it over. So we got an eviction notice saying that three floors in our building we got a 60-day notice to be out by Thanksgiving Day, almost to the day, and the other three floors on our building were supposed to be out with 60-day notices out by Christmas Day, almost to the day of last year, 2013. So approximately half of the people in my building have stayed. We really occupied the building for that for that matter, and so we've been there a lot past our deadline of Thanksgiving Day and Christmas Day.
What was the reasoning?
Well, the reasoning is in the case of my building, way back in 2007. Now, mind you, I moved in there in 2004. I've been there for 10 years now. But back in 2007, the story goes there was a tenant that was disgruntled or something and had complained to the housing rights.
To the Department of Building Inspections
that our units were illegal. They came in, looked at the units. They said they declared the units illegal because a number of them, don't have windows in the rooms. Personally, I have a window in my room, but a number of them don't. But so we're all living there. I've been there since 2004. We knew nothing of this, nothing at all that this had happened in 2007. So it was fine for us to live there till all of a sudden our neighborhood became really worth a lot more money. Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden at 2013, the landlord files a demolition eviction notice on us and did not notify us properly. We had to go, and our people did a lot of work in my building and looked up, found the exact form that he signed for the demolition eviction, and it instructs him to let us know immediately that he's filed for this so that we have a chance to respond. He did not let us know for months. So all the way along, our landlord has been breaking the law. He's been overcharging us on rent. We have a rent control building, and there's a lot of things that have been coming out and that we've been finding out. He's tried different intimidation tactics to get us out, and I could tell you a whole story about that.
That is Chandra Reddick. She's an artist and San Francisco resident who is fighting an eviction. Tommy Avicoli-Mecca is director of the counseling programs at Housing Rights Committee in San Francisco, and Joseph Tobner has been doing tenants' rights work in San Francisco for more than a decade. He's managing attorney of the Tobner Law Center. You want to jump in, Joseph?
Yeah, I want to respond because 1049 is actually it's an interesting story, and it's a success story, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What was really happening at 1049 Market Street, it's two blocks from Twitter.
Right.
And the landlord was demolishing the units to turn them into commercial units. He wanted to get rid of the artists that were under rent control and rent out the units for commercial purposes, and then those units would forever be taken out from under rent control. And with the help of the Housing Rights Committee, tenants' lawyers got organized, the Tenderloin Housing Clinic got involved. There are three attorneys that represent the tenants, and we, for now, have stopped the evictions. The city jumped in, and really, with pressure, revoked the demolition permit, so the landlord now cannot demolish, at least in the near term. And then any tenants that have moved out have filed wrongful eviction lawsuits against the landlord, and we just got a nice result at the at the trial court. The trial court's allowing our wrongful eviction actions to go forward. So it's a real success story. about tenant power in San Francisco. And I think Tommy could speak to that, too, because he was really involved in that.
Yeah, I was actually the one who got the ball rolling on the fight. I helped organize the tenants and also called the mayor's office and everybody else imaginable. When I first started organizing in that building, I was told by everybody I talked to, including a couple lawyers, who told me, you can't win. This is not a fight that you should put a lot of time into, because the best you can get out of this is maybe buy the tenants a little more time, or maybe get them better buyouts. And I said, no, you're wrong. I think the court of public opinion, you know, this is a mass eviction. Mm-hmm. We're looking at 83 units. We're looking at a lot of people being evicted. Artists, who could be more sympathetic than artists? Artists living in live-work lofts. And so we went public with it immediately, like almost immediately, even though people said, oh, you're not going to get the newspapers involved. It was like, we did. Within, I think it was less than a week of my involvement, the Examiner did a front page story in which they called it something like the biggest mass eviction since the iHotel, which was a line I fed the reporter. And that got the city. That's what really sparked the city to take action and to find a way to waive the requirements for the light. The light wells and the windows in the apartments, and got them ultimately to revoke the permit for the demolition. So, you know, the lesson really is for all tenants out there is to fight, because even when everybody's telling you you can't win, even when the odds are totally against you, you may actually win. So fight.
Well, we've got a number of people on the line, so let's hear from Tom in San Francisco. Hi, Tom. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. I want to know, I know landlords are using Airbnb as a pretext to evict, but can they even just evict you if you're letting a relative or friend use your apartment while you're away on vacation? We're not talking like no money or anything, just friendship.
For like a month at a time or something?
Yeah, or a couple weeks. Because I have a cousin who has a kid going to college here now, and I go away, I might let them stay. But, or is that just a lease-dependent kind of thing?
Joseph?
That would be a curable breach. The thing about the Airbnb issue that's different is Airbnb is illegal in San Francisco. It's actually a misdemeanor. It's a crime. And so landlords don't have to give tenants the opportunity to cure the issue, cure the breach. In your case, the landlord would just have to give you, could only give you a 3-day notice to cure or quit. And then you would just tell the landlord, okay, I'm not going to violate the guest policy. What you should be concerned about is the guest policy in your lease.
Right.
You should take a look at it. The guest policy will specify how long a guest can be there, how many days a guest can be there per year and per month.
All right. Well, thank you for the phone call. We have an email from Clarice who says, thank you for the show. I have lived in my Mountain View apartment for 20 years, and my rent has skyrocketed. I have been looking to get out for a year, but because I'm 62, no one will rent to me. Any day now, I know the rent is going to be doubled, and my only option now is to be homeless, so they don't have to evict to get the tenants out. What are my options?
Is that Mountain View as in Mountain View,
California? Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know the laws there. I'm assuming there's no rent control or just cause eviction protection there, in which case the landlord could raise the rent as much as they want.
Joseph, do you know?
Yeah, there's no eviction protection or rent protection in Mountain
right.
View.
None.
I'm curious about the discrimination piece. I mean, the Unruh Civil Rights Act and FEHA prohibit discrimination based on age. If she truly feels like she's being discriminated against, there are organizations that will actually go out and I can't think of them at the top of my head, but organizations that will go out and actually pretend to be renters to determine if there's age discrimination or any type of discrimination going on.
Hmm. Right. The Human Rights Commission, if there's some kind of Human Rights Commission or organization in Mountain View, that organization could possibly do what Joe's saying, go out and send couples out to test.
Well, Claire, we'll look for this, and then I'll email you after the show and let you know of these organizations. And I'm so sorry this is happening. Joseph, I guess living in San Francisco, you just assume that everybody has rent control.
No.
But that's not the case.
No.
Yeah, there are a few jurisdictions that have rent control. We've got Berkeley, Oakland, and San Francisco. San Jose has a limited rent control. And actually, believe it or not, Hayward has a little bit of rent control. And then mobile home parks have rent control.
Yeah.
Tenants in mobile home parks, most cities and counties have adopted rent control to protect mobile home tenants.
And not everybody in San Francisco has rent control. If your building was built after 1979, you have no rent control. You have no just cause eviction protection. So,
all right. Well, thank you for writing in, Clarice. And again, we'll email you some organizations right after the show. Let's take a few more calls before break. Let's hear from Marie-Louise in San Leandro. Hi, Marie-Louise. Welcome to the show.
Listen, I'm calling for my daughter in Oakland. She lives in an apartment with her husband. They've been there about 7 years, and they pay $1,600 a month. And her landlady is not doing repairs. And her apartment's really beginning to look uninhabitable. I mean, she has no doors on her cabinets. Her refrigerator and dishwasher are virtually non-functioning. And she refuses to do any repairs because she said it costs too much and she wants to raise Ame's rent. But they have rent control. And she said, she's baiting her, telling her, if you don't like it, move. Or if you don't like it, pay me more rent and I'll take care of the problems. And I told Ame that, no, you have legal protections against that. So who is it in Oakland that she can turn to get support?
There's the Just Cause. Just Cause in Oakland, I would suggest calling them. Even though in Oakland does have rent control and Just Cause, I don't know the specifics of their laws, but there is state law, California Civil Code 1941.1, that talks about the landlord's obligation to keep things up to code, to keep things habitable. So I'm assuming that there's a way in Oakland to do that. There's probably some kind of Department of Building Inspections or something similar like we have here that can be called in. So I would suggest calling Just Cause or even calling the Oakland Rent Board to get a list of other resources in Oakland.
Okay, and the website is cjjc.org, and the phone number is 510-763-5877, 510-763-5877. And thank you so much. Joseph, I also have been hearing from people in the Bay Area, in San Francisco, a similar story where things are going wrong in the apartment, but tenants are afraid to speak out to the landlord for fear that he or she will get angry and say, okay, well, I'm going to evict you now. And so they're just trying to be as quiet as possible. Are you also hearing this?
Well, in rent control jurisdictions, if the landlord tries to harass a tenant out or refuse to repair to get a tenant out, the tenant has a lot of remedies. There's a really good statute in San Francisco. Is an anti-harassment statute that was passed in 2005 that prohibits a landlord from harassing a tenant out, and one of the types of harassment is failure to make repairs. And it's triple damages. So if a tenant is forced to move out because of repair issues, they get triple the loss of the rent control department, and those lawsuits can be in the hundreds of thousands. Repair lawsuits happen all over the Bay Area all the time. Tenant rights attorneys will take those cases on contingency, kind of like an auto accident case, because landlords have a continuing obligation to make repairs. And like Tommy said, it starts with usually a housing rights organization like Causa Justa. They'll write letters on behalf of the tenants, and then the next step is to call the Department of Building Inspection in the particular city or county, and then the next step is to retain a lawyer. Because a landlord has to make repairs. I mean, that's the bottom line.
All right.
And you can't waive your rights to a habitable place. So.
We're gonna take a quick break, and then after the break, I'd like to also ask you, how do you go about retaining a lawyer, especially if you can't afford, say, $300 an hour? We'll talk about that. We'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on Local Public Radio. If you have a perspective that you've not yet heard in today's discussion or a question you feel needs to be answered, please join our conversation. Here's the number. It's toll-free. Call 866-798-TALK, 866-798-8255. You can also send your question or comment via email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. Coming up in 30 minutes at 11 o'clock, World Have Your Say from the BBC. And following that at 12 noon today, Philosophy Talk with John Perry and Ken Taylor.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will talk about legislative proposals to reform Prop 13, the 1978 amendment to California's Constitution that put a cap on home and commercial property taxes. State lawmakers from both sides of the aisle are supporting a new bill that would close the commercial tax loophole. This bill even has support from the Howard Jarvis Anti-Tax Group, which raised a lot of eyebrows. So we'll be talking about that tomorrow. Could it be a game changer? And will the closure of this loophole actually raise any revenue? And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about how tenants can protect themselves from being evicted. As you know, monthly rents and home prices are really skyrocketing in many parts of Northern California. Rental prices in the Bay Area are at all-time highs. Over the past few years, we've seen a dramatic rise in evictions. According to the San Francisco Rent Board, annual evictions in San Francisco are at their highest levels since 2001. We're also seeing high evictions in Silicon Valley. So if you have any questions about your rights as a tenant, we'd love to hear from you. And if you want to chime in as a landlord, we'd also love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. If you have a personal story to share, we'd like to hear it. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. Today, we're joined by Joseph Tobner, managing attorney of the Tobner Law Center. He's been doing tenants' rights work in San Francisco for more than a decade. Tommy Avicoli Mecca is director of counseling programs at the Housing Rights Committee in San Francisco. And Shonda Reddick is an artist and San Francisco resident who was served with an eviction notice last year. And she and her fellow tenants are currently fighting this eviction. They're still in their building on Market Street. And Joseph, I wanted to ask you, a lot of lawyers are charging, you know, $300 an hour, minimum $1,200. What can people do who can't afford those fees?
Well, if you're facing an eviction, I think the first stop, if you get an eviction notice, is going to be the Housing Rights Committee or the San Francisco Tenants Union. And then once you get the eviction lawsuit, the Eviction Defense Collaborative is an organization that will defend evictions for low cost. That organization has really leveled the playing field for a lot of tenants. And then if you need to hire a private attorney, the Housing Rights Committee and the San Francisco Tenants Union have lists of attorneys, and the attorneys have all been vetted as competent tenant rights attorneys. Also, tenant rights attorneys will often take cases on contingency. If there's a really egregious wrongful eviction, the tenant attorney may take the cases and get a percentage of the outcome so that the tenant doesn't have to pay. And in fact, that's what happened at 1049 Market Street. We represent nine tenants who moved out after the demolition eviction permit was rescinded. The landlord didn't notify the tenants that the permit was rescinded. The landlord didn't have any way to evict, but yet the tenants moved out anyways, not knowing that the landlord no longer could evict. Hmm. And so that's a wrongful eviction, and that's the type of case that an attorney would take on contingency. Another type of case that an attorney would take on contingency is a really bad repair case. If there's been ongoing repairs for more than 5 years, or more than a year, and the repairs are particularly egregious, like there's 3 to 5 really serious things like plumbing leaks, no heat, rats and rodents, then an attorney would likely take that case on contingency. And oftentimes a tenant will have to shop the case around a little bit because depending on the workload of a particular attorney, their standards for the type of case that they would take go up and down.
Right. What is your workload currently?
Well, I mean, we have four attorneys, and pretty much we're working too much, I would say, right now. I mean, the market is crazy, and when I talk to landlord attorneys, they say the same thing. I mean, they're just flooded with activity. It is a very unusual time, and it's a major housing crisis that we're going through. There's no doubt about it.
Well, let's go back to calls. We have one line open, actually, at 866-798-8255. Let's hear from Andrea in Santa Cruz. Hi, Andrea. Welcome to the show.
Rose, it's so good to hear you again. I haven't listened to the show for a while, but, you know, I was in the same apartment here in Santa Cruz, down by the boardwalk, from May of 1988 to October of 2009. The sheriff came and knocked on my door in the morning of October 8th of 2009 and said, get your walker, your toothbrush, and change your clothes and get the F out, you know? And I was having some health problems back then, and the doctors couldn't catch it, and so this paperwork came from the housing authority. I was on Section 8, and I was really ill, and somehow it was the only time, the first time it happened, the paperwork got misplaced, and so I lost my voucher. We'll see, the landlord took advantage of that because I'd been the longest tenant there. There's only 7 units there, and he wanted me out, of course, and he could remodel and jack up the rent. So I'm homeless now for 4 years. Now I'm in a motel, which is owned by this whole Indian cartel, and I was supposed to be out a couple days ago. The manager called me up 2 days ago, and she says, look, you know, you have got to give me $1,200 a day, or you have to check out.
Mm.
So I go down to the office, I said, you know, there's like 5 other disabled people living here, too, and I said, are they all moving out, you know? And I said, you know, I can go right down to the county courthouse here, and I'll get Sam Farr, and I'll get the mayor over here. We'll see if the room's worth that. And she got real quiet, and she took my keys, she took my debit card, but it's really hard because I only get $961 a month in disability, and I'm paying $850 a month.
Wow. Well, Andrea, thanks so much for calling, and, you know, Joseph, Andrea's story is pretty similar. I recently interviewed a woman in San Francisco who was evicted, and she lived in motels for about 3 months and said the nightly rate fluctuated. So one night it would be $80, and if a convention was in town, it would be $130. Is this legal?
Well, I think the fluctuating rent is fine, but what's interesting to me about the caller's case and the case that you're citing is, and Tommy can back me up on this, is that a guest in a hotel gets tenant protections after 30 days.
Hmm.
And so if the caller has been in the hotel for more than 30 days, the hotel would have to go through the proper legal channels to evict. So they'd have to serve a proper eviction notice, and they'd have to go through the court process to remove the guest from the hotel because the guest becomes a tenant. The same is true in San Francisco. And in fact, there's an interesting part of the Airbnb story that is going to be in the news this week. Guests who stay on Airbnb, use Airbnb for more than 32 days in San Francisco, have eviction protection,
right,
and cannot be evicted unless there's a just cause.
Hmm.
That's in single-family homes. In buildings with 2 or more units, the Airbnb guest has eviction protection on day one in San Francisco. So on day one of an Airbnb rental, the host cannot evict a tenant without going through the proper legal channels to evict.
So that
means serving a proper notice, having a just cause, and going through the court procedure to remove the tenant.
Joe, is that if the person's paying 1 month's rent up front, they gain tenancy?
On day one in a building with 2 or more units,
right, but
the guest has eviction protection. In a single-family home, the guests have to be there for 32
right, but in the 2 or more units, is that a case? What if someone comes in on day one, but they're only paying weekly? They only pay a week's rent. Are they still protected? Because I don't think they would gain tenancy if they only pay a week's rent.
I think the tenant has eviction protection on day one.
Huh.
Maybe they have to pay 30 days.
I think they have to pay 30 days because that's usually the case. Once you pay your 30-day, your check for 30 days, you gain tenancy because it's that way generally under, you know.
I have a client who was who rented out from 2 lawyers from a single family home for 75 consecutive days on Airbnb. She's
right.
been situationally homeless for a couple of years. She was also evicted from her place 2 years ago, and she's a writer in San Francisco. She's lived here for 20 years, and she's been renting on Airbnb because she can't get the money together to mm-hmm. put down, you know, a big deposit. And on the 75th day, the lawyer said, get the hell out. And noon the next day, the police were there and said, get out.
No.
You know, whatever happened to, you know, the regular roommate situation?
Right.
The sharing economy is that's not sharing.
No.
When I have a buddy sleep on my couch at night, you know, one night, that's sharing.
Mm-hmm.
But having someone rent for me for 75 days and
right.
then telling them to get the hell out.
And
sharing.
Joseph, do you have any recommendations for Andrea in Santa Cruz who's about to be kicked out from the motel?
Well, that's a tough situation. She definitely needs a lawyer, and I don't know the organizations down in in Santa Cruz County. Maybe
Tommy, do you?
Well, if there's a Bay Area legal aid or a legal aid of any sort, she should definitely Google it, because there's usually some group like the Bay Area legal aid or some kind of legal aid. I'm assuming there, because Santa Cruz is a pretty together place. Yeah. I always assume that they have some kind of legal aid.
All right. And we'll take a look also, Andrea, and put some links up on the website right after the show. Thank you for calling in. Let's go to our next caller, Abby in Oakland. Hi, Abby. Hi, Abby. Are you there? I think I hear you. Nope. All right. Sorry, Abby. Let's go to Charles in San Francisco. Hi, Charles. Hello, Charles.
Hello. Hi.
Go ahead.
I've been renting a unit out of three units in our property, upstairs, downstairs, and in the back, for many, many years. And very recently, within the last few days, we just quite suddenly out of the blue got letters in our mailboxes, not particularly well addressed, you know, no names, just, you know, tenant of this unit, tenant of that unit, saying, you know, all of a sudden, you know, oh, hey, you know, we're the new real estate company that's, you know, representing your landlord, and, you know, we want to come in, and we're going to do an inspection, and, you know, things like that. And just out of the blue, with no word from our actual landlord, who's notoriously a little bit hard to get a hold of. So I think that's the whole thing. I think that's what I have to say, and I don't know quite how to proceed, where to go for, in particular, where to go quickly for proper information about how to proceed cautiously and not blow it.
All right, thank you. Tommy or Joe, any advice?
Well, I mean, California Civil Code 1954 spells out specific reasons when a landlord can enter, and it's always with a 24-hour written notice, and they have to specify in the notice when they're entering and the reason that they're entering for. So,
and I'll just piggyback on that and say that a landlord cannot come in and do a routine inspection. Civil Code Section 1954 does not allow you to do a routine inspection. It sounds like an intimidation tactic. Oftentimes, and I hate to say this because it's going to make people paranoid, but Tommy can back me up. Oftentimes, landlords will come in to do an inspection to trump up a just cause for eviction so that they can start the process moving to get a long-term tenant out.
All right. Well, thank you. Good luck. Again, check the website, yourcallradio.org, for resources. Today, we are talking about the evictions that we're seeing in Northern California. What can tenants do to prevent an eviction? If you have any questions, we'd love to hear from you. We also have a couple landlord questions, so if you're a landlord and you'd like to call in, you can give us a ring. Actually, we've got full lines now, but we'll have one open in a few minutes at 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we're joined by Joseph Tobner, managing attorney of the Tobner Law Center. He's been doing tenants' rights work in San Francisco for more than a decade. Tommy Avicoli Mecca is director of counseling programs at the Housing Rights Committee of San Francisco. And Chandra Reddick is an artist and San Francisco resident who was recently served with an eviction notice. Chandra, I want to ask you a quick question before we go back to emails. We've got a bunch of emails, full lines. How can you empower yourself through this process? I recently got a book called California Tenants' Rights Handbook. It's like 350 pages. Mm-hmm. It's pretty daunting. So people have very simple questions. What is the best way to go about empowering yourself with information? Because you've been through this process.
Yeah, it can be really intimidating when the landlord wants you out, and you just have to swallow your fear. What was instrumental for us was it just happened that another tenant who was an acquaintance of mine and myself happened to wander down to the San Francisco Housing Rights Committee, where Tommy works, and they were instrumental from day one in helping us get the information we need and plugging us into, you know, the Eviction Defense Committee and all these things. So what we had to do in our building, again, there's 80 units in our building. The landlord owns three buildings such on the block, but has started with ours as far as evictions. We had to start talking to our neighbors. You know, many of us have lived there for a long time. People have lived there longer than me, some people, and I've been there 10 years. And, you know, we had never talked to each other in the elevators and stuff. So suddenly, we were suddenly having to talk to each other, which was great. We were meeting new friends, getting to know each other, and helping each other out. So Ben and I, with the help of Tommy, we helped to organize our building with 80 units, and not all units have one people, the person. There's a number of units that have more than one person. Luckily, we knew Ben was really savvy with tech stuff. We got email lists going for the whole building. We did phone conferences. We were lucky the a couple buildings down from us, the Luggage Center, let us have meetings there. And in the beginning, we were having meetings where 80 people would show up, 50 people would show up. And some of the people showing up to the meetings were not just living in our building, but in the other two buildings owned by our landlord, who were also worried about being threatened. So you can never go wrong with standing up and fighting. You will always win if you stay. You will always win. You'll at least win more time. You'll probably be offered a buyout. But we want to stay in that building. The people are there now. We're going for the full tilt boogie. We need to stay there. We can't afford to live anywhere else in this town or even in the Bay Area.
Well, we've got some related emails. Susan writes, what about single-family homes in San Francisco? Many of us in the western neighborhoods moved here for affordable housing with our families. Rents are now doubling and tripling, and we are worried that we will have to leave as we have no rent control. Those of us with children in schools here also have that to consider with uprooting. Thank you for the discussion. And then another email from Vicky. I've watched real estate costs rise in the Bay Area for years, and until recently, I never felt vulnerable. But now, if we lost our home rental, we would be forced to leave our city of residence for the last 26 years. I did the math, and my husband and I would need an income of $240,000 annually to live in San Francisco at the current rates. Not all of us are in the tech industry rich, nor will we be. So what about the rest of us? Where are we supposed to go? We have a lot of emails that sound very similar to this.
Right. And we're hearing that every day in my office. People are coming in and saying that. Single family homes. The thing is, if the single family home has an in-law or a garage apartment, as they often do, then it should be under rent control if it was constructed before 79. So a single family home, in order not to have rent control, is just a single family home, just one space that's occupied by one family or one group of individuals with one lease. If the landlord is renting out individual rooms in that single family dwelling with separate leases, so Chandra and I live there, but we each have a separate agreement with the landlord. We each pay rent to the landlord directly separately. Then that's considered a two unit at that point because it's being run like a boarding house. So therefore, that would be under rent control. So whenever people say to me single family dwellings, I'm not under rent control, I always ask them a zillion questions and, you know, just to make sure that they are indeed not under rent control, because chances are sometimes they might be under rent control.
All right. Well, thank you for those emails. We have a few emails from landlords. Linda in the East Bay says, thank you for presenting this story to your listeners and highlighting the struggle tenants face. However, there is something to be said for landlords as well. We live in a capitalist society where free markets reign. There will be areas that are more versus less expensive, and overly protectionist policies limit growth. Are there tax or other benefits provided to landlords that own rent-protected property? Otherwise, how do you justify the restrictions placed on landlords and investors? We have another email from Peter who says, we own a four-unit building in Diamond Heights and live in one of the units. We rent out the other three apartments. They're all rent-controlled. One unit is rented by a very successful couple. They pay only $1,200 a month for a two-bedroom bath apartment. They both earn over $150,000 a year, drive a Porsche and a Mercedes. They also own a vacation condo in Hawaii. My wife and I earn $100,000 a year between us and have one car, a Ford Fiesta. Why should a couple earning $300,000 a year be protected under rent control? We're subsidizing their lifestyle. He writes, I agree with the concept to protect old people, but there should be some type of means test. If you're rich, you don't need rent control. Joseph, what are your thoughts on this? We got an email or call last time around from a woman who is a teacher. She owns a building. And she said one of her tenants works at Google, and he doesn't really pay much in rent, and she didn't think that was fair.
I think you're mostly talking about exceptions.
Exactly.
to the general populace here in San Francisco. Most of the people under rent control that are benefiting from rent control are teachers, artists, musicians, public servants. The six teachers have been Ellis Act evicted in the last 6 months, and there was a big story about it. But by the way, I want to encourage your listeners, before I forget, to call their legislatures and give support for the Leno legislation. It just passed the Senate. Mm-hmm. And the real estate speculator lobby is telling me that the Leno legislation is going to be dead in the Assembly. What the Leno legislation is going to do is create a five-year waiting period for real estate speculators to Ellis buildings in San Francisco. It's a really important piece of legislation. Most of the Ellis Act evictions in San Francisco are being done by real estate speculators, mm-hmm. and if we can close that loophole, it will be tremendously beneficial to keeping people housed. The real estate speculator lobby is really powerful, and I talked to probably the most powerful real estate attorney in San Francisco yesterday, and he said that Leno doesn't stand a chance against his lobby.
Oh, really?
His lobbyists. So I really encourage listeners to call their representatives.
Wait. Joseph, even if this is a small fraction of renters, I mean, what would you say to some of these landlords who feel like, you know, they're getting $1,000 a month from a Google employee and they can't afford that?
Well, maybe Tommy's better to answer.
Tommy,
that
what are your
I
thoughts?
Am.
Well, my thoughts are, what about means testing for landlords? You know, what about all these landlords who have lots and lots and lots of money? And shouldn't we mean test them? And shouldn't we reduce the rents in those buildings for all those tenants?
What about the ones that just wrote in and said they don't really make that much money? They just bought the building a while ago for an investment.
Again, I think. You're talking about landlords bought the building for an investment.
Like these people who said, you know, we make, or like the teacher who called
last
time.
But I think that's the exception. I don't think that's the rule. I think that's the exception. I think landlords are doing very well. I'm sorry, I can't feel sympathetic, because if you own a building in San Francisco right now, you're sitting on a gold mine. You're absolutely sitting on a gold mine. I don't care what condition that building's in. So cut me a break. Don't give me this crap. If you own a piece of property, you are owning something that's got to be worth $1 million or more. And cut me a break. You know, I don't buy the sob stories. And the other thing is, you know, the reality is, it is my view that housing is a human right. Right. The UN has declared it. The United States refuses to adopt that idea. But the reality is, the root cause of our housing crisis and all the crises that we have in this country around housing is because housing is a commodity. Housing should not be a commodity. We have got the only way we get out of this housing crisis is to figure out a way in the long term to stop making housing a commodity and guarantee that everybody can have access to housing. And, you know, granted, that's not likely in a capitalist society unless we change the nature of the society and we make it less capitalist and more socialist. So, you know, so be it. But the reality is, the root cause of our problem is housing is a commodity, and only people who can afford it get the type of housing they can afford. And that's a bad idea, and that results in what we have now. People losing their housing, ending up leaving the city, people becoming homeless. We haven't even talked about how many people who get evicted become homeless and add to the number of homeless people on our street. So our city's in this vicious circle. It does all these things to put people in housing who are on the streets, but then we create, every year we're creating more homelessness because low-income and working-class people getting evicted, some of them are going to end up on the streets. So until we stop treating housing as a commodity and guarantee housing for everyone, we're never going to solve this problem.
And if you haven't been to San Francisco in a while, the homeless issue is just really increasing. I mean, I'm seeing so many more people on the streets in the city. I have an email from Greg who says, is it your claim that $3,500 a month is the current market rate for a one-bedroom? If so, can you please cite a source? Greg, actually, that's my experience in my neighborhood near Golden Gate Park, because like so many, I'm afraid I'm probably going to get evicted in the next year. So I've been looking around. $3,500 a month is the average for a one bedroom in my neighborhood. But according to I'll find the source, but according to Real Facts, a real estate data company, San Francisco's overall median rental rate for a one bedroom is about $2,800. A two bedroom is about $4,000. Is that about right, Joseph, based on what you've seen?
Yeah, that's definitely right. I mean, rents are soaring. And there was a story that came out recently of a landlord in the Haight that sent a letter to all the tenants in a multi-unit building and said, hey, you have to make $100,000 or more to live in this building. Of course, that went to current tenants, which is absurd, but I don't doubt that you have to make six figures to live in San Francisco now. I mean, a room in the Mission is going to cost you $1,750 to $2,000, just a room.
Right. That's
in a share situation.
Yeah, that's the other thing that was shocking. I thought, all right, roommates, how much does that cost? It's about $1,500 to $2,000 for a room. So thanks for the email. Did you want to add something else?
Yeah, I just want to add that Airbnb and the sharing economy impacts the housing shortage, especially for rooms. I mean, if you can rent out a room on Airbnb 15 days a month and make more than you can by having a roommate, you're probably going to do it. And landlords do it too. Their entire units, we estimate thousands of units more than 1,000 units being taken out permanently from rent control because of the sharing economy. So landlords will rent out full units on Airbnb, and in 15 days can make the same amount that they would in a month with a rent-controlled tenant, and they don't have all the tenant restrictions.
A lot of people are writing in to respond to Andrea in Santa Cruz. And Andrea, if you're still listening, the California Rural Legal Assistance is a good place for you to start. Phone number 831-688-6535, and we'll put a link on our website. Joseph, we also have a couple emails from listeners who say, is this a bubble? When do we see the end here? What are your thoughts based on what you've seen in the last decade?
Well, I would need a crystal ball to know if it's a bubble, but I do think that we're in a housing bubble and every bubble bursts, but it's never going to return the way it is. I have to tell you that I'm displacing hundreds of people. I say that I'm displacing them because they're being bought out of their tenancies, they're being forced out, they're moving to Oakland, moving to Oregon and Washington. They're teachers, they're the people we want living in the city, artists, musicians. The people that live at 1049 Market Street, those people aren't coming back. So, it's probably a bubble, and things may return a little bit. But it's we're losing people, and those people aren't going to come back.
Wow. What's the average buyout right now? I mean, I'm sure it varies.
Well, it depends. I mean, a single family home, because there's not rent control, will be in the $30,000 range. A two-unit building is going to be the most lucrative buyout, and that can approach six figures. I mean, there's quite a range there.
Well, we're
definitely, depends on how long the tenant's been in occupancy.
We're definitely going to have to do another show on this because we did not get to all calls and emails, right. And there's just so many questions, and we'll definitely revisit this. Joseph Tobner is managing attorney of the Tobner Law Center. Tommy Avicoli Mecca is director of counseling programs at the Housing Rights Committee, and Chandra Reddick is an artist and SF resident who is fighting an eviction. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. And thank you for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. Is it time to reform Prop 13? On the next Your Call, we'll talk about legislative proposals to reform the 1978 amendment to California's Constitution that put a cap on home and commercial property taxes in the state. State lawmakers from both sides of the aisle are supporting a new bill that would close the commercial tax loophole. The Howard Jarvis Anti-Tax Group also supports the bill. So could this be a game changer for California? Join the conversation on the next Your Call with Holly Kernan and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. And Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.